I have a sheaf of papers here in preparation. One of the most significant of these is a brochure that was mailed out this week talking about broadly the issue of stewardship, and I'm going to talk about that today, and I think it's going to be even sort of fun. But I'm going to get to that in a minute. I want to talk a little bit about two of the lessons that I'm not going to try to integrate into the main body. So you'll get two or three sermons. Take your pick, whichever one you like best. The gospel today. I'm not going to try to make this too complicated. The Pharisee and the tax collector. There are things that are probably going on that would have struck the ear of a first century hearer of this parable. Pharisee and tax collector, about as strong as a comparison as you could make. And that the Pharisee was praying, "I'm glad I'm not like other people." I mean, Pharisee means separated ones. And so they would have, Jesus' audience would have heard that. But I mean, the essential point of the story is, or a couple of them. Don't compare yourself. There's no meaningful comparison whatsoever between you and anyone else. The course of your life, has to be worked out between you and God, and you and the real God. And of course, that is much of what a human quest for an authentic life really is to identify what the real source of this experience really is. And if there is a persistent and terrible human failing, it is we are so often wrong about God. And we take God to be the loudest voice that's going on inside us. And unfortunately, that's often our parents' voice. Do this! Don't do that! Do this! Don't do that! No, it must be God. Well, no. And or you get involved in, you know, some kind of, some group activity that, again, sweeps you up with great intensity. This must be God. Probably not. So, what we do as a people is we try to listen to the stories of Jesus and say, in him was the fullness of God's presence revealed. If you want to understand how God works as a human being, look at Jesus. And that Jesus was, I mean, he's holding up the Pharisee and the tax collector and saying, to the surprise of his hearers, the tax collector actually is on a more authentic spiritual path than one of your own religious leaders. So, don't compare yourself, and really, in the secrecy of your heart, like Jacob wrestling last week, you're going to have to figure out and choose and walk in faith the course of your own life, and it's between you and God. I also want to mention just a word of this psalm, which I've loved for many years. Those who go through the desolate valley will find it a place of springs. And anybody, really, at any time, can be faced with a desolate valley. And in the simplest terms, the desolate valley is whatever in your life it is that you want to avoid. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to go through this. I wish there were a way around it. The moment you start going like that, you're in a desolate valley. Because you're divided. You're saying, here's my life, and yet I'm saying no to some significant part of it. And it makes things desolate. So if you go through the desolate valley, if you decide instead of trying to avoid or deny the very thing that is upsetting you, but if you try to open yourself to that, the place of springs, what that really means is it is so infinitely preferable to be united with yourself, not to be fleeing from your own life, not to be divided, not to be saying, no, I don't want to do that. No, I won't face that. I will not face that. That's the desolation. But to come back, the sorrow may be there, the fear, the illness, whatever it is that you might have wanted to avoid, it will still be there. But at least you'll be with yourself. And of course, you'll be with God. Yeah, that's the trick, really, is how can God get to us when we're running away from ourselves? We run away from ourselves, we're also running away from God. Go through the desolate valley. You will find it a place of springs. Okay, stewardship. Okay, so I want to talk about this brochure a little bit, but I want to start by recalling to you one of the great moments of my life. And some of you may be old enough to have experienced something similar. I was probably 10 years old. Didn't look up exactly the release date. Sitting in my Friday night theater with all my friends for a great double bill when I was 10 years old. The B movie was Day of the Triffids. The A movie was the first version of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. has ever a greater movie been made? The pods started appearing, the pod people started walking around without any emotion, without feeling. And of course, I was 10 years old, and I missed the politics of the end of the Eisenhower era and the man in the gray flannel suit and the corporate, guys being sort of absorbed into a soulless and deadened, spiritless life. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, pod people. Okay, so that was 50 years ago. Where are we now? Corey and I have gotten, we've subscribed to television. After years and years, I've lived really almost all my adult life. All my adult life without television. And as I said to someone the other day, now that I've got it, I remember why I didn't have it. And you might think that I'm going to focus mostly on what seems to predominate in TV: aliens, androids, vampires, and zombies. Again, there is represented a kind of human experience: androids, vampires, zombies. But those are really not the most troubling, because they're sort of easy to spot. What really troubles me about what I see on television is that in image after image after image after image, I see people in human form to whom it has never occurred to ask a meaningful question, who have never looked up at the stars and said, "Oh my God, where am I and who am I?" Which is to say, image after image of people in human form who are not human, whose essential human quality has disappeared. And let me tell you, the issue of secularity has nothing to do with prayer in schools. It has to do with this disappearance. This disappearance of wonder, this disappearance of inquiry, and you just look at the cultural landscape, and people, they make the pod people look like Nelson Mandela. It's sort of the same thing. I hope I don't offend anyone, but it's politically, it's like looking back and thinking, Richard Nixon wasn't so bad. it's just these are signposts in our decline. The landscape of popular culture is populated with these human forms whose heart and soul have simply disappeared. And so, when we talk about stewardship, I want us to really understand what we're trying to do here. And we are in the middle of a kind of cultural, it's not a war, I don't want to use that term, but compared to what is held up, say, in television, and really I almost got started more on this line of thinking by movies, and I've been seeing the ads for the movie The Counselor, just thousands of stars in it, and Cormac McCarthy wrote the screenplay. But good reviewers are saying, how can this despicable, incoherent, inhumane movie, how could it even get made? And how, what kind of torture was it for the actors knowing that they were doing such drivel? What we are trying to do, we are trying to hold up a vision of human possibility and human actuality. We're trying to hold up a vision of great, profound human dignity that is within every person, and that every single human being is most clearly recognized when you are addressing them in the spirit of that great shared dignity. And we are talking about beings who have mysteriously and wondrously come to consciousness on this little planet and have the capacity to look both within and without and wonder and ask, what are we doing here? And we gather to reflect especially on the one whom we call Jesus, the Christ, the one in whom God's presence was most fully manifest in human form. And we say, wow, if we can listen to the teachings of Jesus and look at his life and remember the kind of relationships that he invites us into, not just with ourselves, but with the people around us, and that if we can really begin to explore the transforming power, not of revenge, I mean, every single character that I see on television, the only resource for addressing conflict is violence. Let's go kill them. And we're trying to say something different here. We are trying to say something different. We're trying to hold up the human possibility that the love that is, that the love that within which we live and move and have our being, we can speak to that in each other, and we can call it forth in each other, and we can help everyone enter into their deep, deep dignity. It's what Nelson Mandela did, even to the jailers on Robben Island, these brutish guys who had never learned any better. And Nelson Mandela saw in them the innate dignity of being a human being and called it forth. That's what we're trying to do here. We are trying to hold up real human possibility and real human authenticity that doesn't leave anything out. It goes all the way down to the deepest wonder and mystery that we are capable even of glimpsing. We say, let's put that wonder and mystery at the center of our lives. Let's open our hearts and minds to real questions. Let's practice what we hear. Let's practice the possibility of love among us, where conflict is overcome by forgiveness and openness, not my power is stronger than yours and I will defeat you. We're doing a wonderful thing. We are doing a thing that is so absolutely crucial that sometimes, it does. Sometimes it feels a little candle in the Livingston wind, culturally, and let's do it together. The money you give, the time you give, the heart you give, the soul you give, it's not just to support an institution, it is to hold open a human space that has been given us by the one who made all of this, given us by God. We're trying to hold open that human space so that we can both retain the humanity that is ours already, but that also the horizons open up to us and that we understand more and more deeply what it really means to be human in communion with each other and ourselves and with God.